Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
A couple of weeks ago, we spoke with the wonderful Inika Kodam about death-related experiences. Now, this week, we follow up on that interview by talking about the many kinds of transpersonal experiences that are happening daily to unsuspecting people all over the world. Some of them are related to death, some are not. And this is one, frankly, of the biggest underreported stories of all. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is the wonderful Madeline Lawrence. She's a researcher of many talents. She refers to herself as a parapsychologist, so I had to look that up. And my dictionary says that's someone who researches unexplained mental phenomena, which about sums it up. Madeline researches all the many kinds of extraordinary experiences that prove to us in so many ways our minds are not generated by our brains. Her 2014 book is The Death View Revolution, A Guide to Transpersonal Experiences Surrounding Death. And this is a wonderful book. I urge you to read it. It's scholarly, but it's very readable. Welcome, Madeline.
Hi, Roberta. I'm just delighted to be here speaking with you. This is obviously a subject near and dear to my heart. So
yes, it should be. It soon will be near and dear to every heart as we begin to get the message out that all of this is real. There's no such thing as New Age. There's no such thing as woo-woo. This is all just normality. It's just that until now, science has been unwilling to look at the facts. It studies less than 5% of what we know, and what they know is true and real. But we'll get past that. Meanwhile, you and I have a lot of work to do.
Okay, I'm ready when you are.
Madeline, tell us how you got into this. How did you start researching transpersonal experiences and all the wonderful things you do?
My official initiation was when I took a course with Dr. Kenneth Ring. I was working on my doctorate, my advisor, I had to take two courses in a related field. I was in education and, and I didn't want to take the course. I really didn't want to take it. But when I met Ken and started taking the course, I was so enthralled. I wrote a 50-page paper for the course. I got so into it. And so from that point on, I started doing this kind of research.
And you've done a really fairly broad research. I mean, a lot of people focus on one kind of experience. They focus on near-death experiences, or they focus on the experiences that surround death itself. How did you get started? What tugged you in? Was it near-death experiences, or was it something else?
Well, actually, it was something else. Ken invited a group of people to come and speak to the class who had near-death experiences, and one of the women had been unconscious and talked about what she could hear when she was unconscious, because coming from a nursing background, I went, oh, my goodness, she really could hear, because that's what people always say.
Yeah.
You know, always talk, because patients, even if they're unconscious. So I ended up doing a study where I interviewed 111 people who had been previously unconscious. And not only did they have, about 25% of them had some kind of what we would call paranormal or extrasensory. I still don't have a good name for
yes,
it.
Yes.
But some of them had near-death experiences, but some of them had out-of-body experiences. Some of them saw dead relatives in their hospital room, something I called near-death visits.
Sure.
So it wasn't just near-death that was happening. And then as a hospice coordinator, I also talked to patients who were close to dying, who would have what they call deathbed visions, and now we call deathbed communications, because it's not only seeing, sometimes they hear or feel a deceased person. So that's really how I got to be more beyond just the near-death experience.
We should mention that the term deathbed visions was coined by Sir William Barrett, who in his 1926 book first really introduced the world to this stuff. 1926.
Yes.
I think it's important that people understand that those who are remotely interested in this field have known about all this stuff for almost 100 years, which is all the more amazing that there are any people who don't know it. As people are approaching death, it's a perfectly natural process, which you describe beautifully in your book. It's very personal. It starts to be, as we get close to death, a planned death, almost all our deaths, I would say 99.9%, judging from what the dead tell us, are actually planned by us before we're born. As we get close, we start to be able to see and hear, and as you say, feel the presence of people that we used to think were dead. I think this is a universal experience. I think I know why it happens now. It took me a long time to figure it out. What are your thoughts? Do you think it's universal?
What I can document. So what I, sometimes what I believe and then what I can document.
Yes.
Sometimes
yes.
Are two different things.
Right.
But what I can document is probably about 60 to 80% of people who come close to death sense their loved one or a close person is there with them. And the other thing that we can document very well is if once they have these deathbed communications, their anxiety level about dying goes down, their need for pain medication is dramatically reduced, and they're kind of ready for this next journey in a peaceful way.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a very important thing to point out. It seems to be that as soon as you're in contact with someone you used to think was dead,
right,
you lose your fear and anxiety. It's gone. And the sense I get is because the sort of medication people are given for pain seems to suppress their ability to talk about these, I think those are the 20% that we talk about.
Well, that could be. That's a good thought. I mean, that's a good area for investigation that I don't know that we've looked at enough. But
it still happens. But very often people like that who are heavily medicated will actually go to sleep here and wake up there. They won't have an experience of leaving their body consciously.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah, I would agree. There's a lot about this transition that we can describe, and some obviously we don't understand, but we do know that this is that deathbed communication of some sort is very, very common, and one of the issues that I bring up in the book is people, whether you believe in whatever you believe is the cause of this or what happens, the fact that it happens is indisputable, that this is something that happens to people, and people want to talk about it. You know, when they're sitting in bed and they're saying, oh, there's Uncle Fred sitting in the corner there.
Yes, I know. Yes.
They want to be able to be happy about that. And oftentimes people's reactions are, oh, no, don't say that. You know, somebody's going to think you're crazy.
Yes.
Well, it's comfort. That's comfort for the dying person.
Yes.
And it's important to validate that. It's important to, comment about it, ask questions about it, and, let them elaborate on what they're seeing. And it's fairly easy to know that this, their patients, when they have these experiences, are aware of where they are, who they are, who else is in the room. The only thing different about them is that they see Uncle Fred sitting in the chair and
right,
and nobody else sees him. So it's really, and I have this very wise friend who works in assisted living, and she is excellent with this. She will talk to the person and say, and support them through this and help them, feel good about the fact that they can see a deceased friend or relative and that they're there to be with them. And that's an important message. I think that's something that we need to do more of and not just try to cover it up if that does happen.
Well, that's why it's so important to get the word out to people about the fact that this is a universal experience. If the person sitting at a parent or a loved one's bedside has no idea this is normal, they're going to say, be normal. I don't want them to come take you away when you're dying, for heaven's sake. People in the white coats are coming. They're not coming. This is just a perfectly natural, beautiful process. And it's just past time that we all understood that. But just to say something I've said repeatedly, and I think it's important to keep always in mind, the reason we aren't being shown all of this is that about 100 years ago, as quantum physics was becoming a real problem for physicists, we also started to get very good communications from the dead, including wonderful proofs of their survival that they thought up themselves. And these started to be written in books because there were researchers who were saying, this is cutting edge. I'm going to help scientists get started in this wonderful new science.
Right.
Instead of doing that, what scientists did, and physicists quite deliberately did, was to turn science into another religion. They adopted what they called the fundamental dogma, and you can find those words in print, of science, which is atheistic materialism. There is no God and everything is matter. That's a fact. And anything with a dogma is a religion, kiddos. It is not a science anymore. And that is the problem science has had, frankly. Physics is the core science. What physicists do, they make the rules. Everybody else follows. And that's why medicine is in the weeds. That's why every science is in the weeds, because physicists are clinging to what they called, they don't put it in print anymore, they're too embarrassed to do that, but they still enforce it in universities, the fundamental dogma of materialism, or depending on where you see it, or atheistic materialism.
I agree somewhat with what you're saying, Roberta, but I think that one of the, in my opinion, one of the very interesting things that has happened is because near-death experiences and some of these other experiences happen to within the healthcare field. And the doctors now have taken over a lot of this research. So because they're credible people professionally, they're seen as, obviously well-educated, good ethics, and very tuned in to people. So that research now has gained a different kind of footing because of where it's occurring. And I think, years ago when some of this was more with the psychics and the mediums, it didn't have some of the credibility. But this near death and all these other related experiences are documented now by not only doctors, but nurses, healthcare professionals. And that's given it, I think, a different slant, a different kind of credibility. We know they happen. I mean, there's no doubt that they happen. We're still trying to, understand them better. But, millions and millions of people have these kinds of experiences.
It's happening in the medical field now more because they're in contact with people. If you talk to any hospice worker, you hear amazing stories. They all have witnessed them.
Yes.
The problem we still have is that in the universities, they still enforce the dogma. So if you go in, I've heard from people who know people, and I'm sure I'll hear directly from people eventually who are trying to become physicists, and they're told when they're entering a PhD program, if you intend to look at this whole area over here, don't bother to get a PhD because you will not ever get a job in a university. You can't look at this stuff. And that continues to this day in the university setting in traditional physics. I don't doubt for a moment that what you're saying is right, and it's exciting. And I know some of these people who are working in medicine, and some of them are famous. I mean, Evan Alexander has done a wonderful thing in really coming out with what happened to him, because for heaven's sake, he's a very, very prominent surgeon. This is terrific. Yeah. And a neurosurgeon on top of it all.
Right, right.
So that's hopeful. And we all owe a tremendous debt to Raymond Moody, also a physician.
Absolutely.
In 1975, he started all this revolution with life after life, where he first actually coined the term near-death experience. All wonderful. The problem that the physicists have is this. If you ever acknowledge in a formal way that these are actually real experiences, it's like a tugged string. You have to acknowledge a whole world of new information that literally altogether transforms physics, which is why we still have debunkers, and some of them are fairly prominent, who will show you how it's near-death experiences aren't real. Instead, it's a deprivation of oxygen to the brain. We still have physicists and consciousness researchers looking for a source of consciousness in the brain, because if it's not there, they're in a world of hurt. Their whole careers are destroyed. People don't want that. They've got to feed the kiddies. So many people have said this, but Max Planck, who was the father of quantum physics, said rather prominently that science advances by deaths. The problem is we've had about four generations die since he said that, and we still have this problem with physics. It'll end.
It'll only end
when we rub their noses in it. So keep doing what you're doing, Madeline. It's so important. We've got to get their attention.
Well, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I'd like to add one more thing. There's no research funding for this kind of research, or very limited.
Right. And that's a problem because because of these gatekeepers, these scientific gatekeepers who will not allow universities to look at this stuff. You're absolutely right. Money is the real problem.
What the NIH has started for a number of years now, a complementary therapies program. So they will fund that. That was kind of a step in. It's obviously it's not the same topic, but it's a related topic, where that complementary therapies have always been not acknowledged, where now NIH does have funding sources for that. And I think once we start getting funding for this kind of research, you're going to see some changes in, you know, the acceptance of this level, this type of research. But the more people like you who promote this, who talk about it, who get people who write books about it to talk about it, I think that's going to push the move forward. But, you know, one of my favorite books is a book called Theory of Scientific Revolution. Uh-huh. And he talks about paradigm shifts and how when you get a paradigm, when you start seeing anomalies that don't fit into the theories, the way we look at life, that people will fight them and try to make sense of these anomalies based on what we know.
That's right.
But in fact, once these anomalies keep happening, and people get more and more information, it's then you see this shift, you see the acceptance and the shift into you know, a new way of looking at issues. You know, and we've seen, you know, whether it's like, for example, the women's movement, you know, that was a huge shift for most of us. It does take time, and sometimes you get tired of waiting for the time. You know, you want it to happen.
Well, especially because people are suffering. There is suffering going on now, which doesn't have to be. When people know that our minds are eternal, we never begin, we never will end, and we can actually demonstrate that's true. Think of how that will change the world and the way people behave and think, and easing pain and causing joy and making people care about actually advancing spiritually. I mean, if you think you're going to live in your brain and then you're going to die, and so who cares? You're going to get yours now. But when you understand that your life is eternal, you're not going to mess up the living room with doing stupid things in this lifetime. You have to live there forever.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, when you have that mindset, right. I read someplace someone's idea of what happens when we die is we have certain energy levels, certain kind of personas that have a certain energy. And so, like, for example, if you're a really good person and you do good things and you help people, then when you die, you're going to be hanging out with people who have similar kind of energies. But if you're not, you know, you get to hang out with the other people, and that may not be pleasant. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I thought that that was kind of an interesting notion about how what you look like and what happens to you in the afterlife, depending upon what you do in this life.
We actually know a tremendous amount about what actually happens, and that's like a lot of suppositions about the afterlife. That's true-ish, but the whole purpose of being here is to learn to love and forgive more perfectly. And those who have done the most of that are the teachers in the next level. And we're all trying to learn. Even the most evil people, they may hate themselves. They may put themselves into the outer darkness for millennia. But ultimately, there is like every hunger you can possibly imagine in your life, there is a hunger for spiritual growth, which underlies it all. And that's what we feel in the afterlife. And we really try to grow. So the people who have been best in this life end up teachers there. And we're all making the same wonderful journey, and it's an eternal journey. That's what's so amazing about all of this.
Yes.
But people are saying, sitting in traffic, people are saying, Roberta, get back to talking to this wonderful woman about what she's learned. All right, sorry about that. We tend to will gather and talk sometimes. Madeline, tell us about what you've learned about the death process. You don't know as much, I think, as I do, but we've talked to you and I a little bit about how we can distinguish those experiences from near-death experiences.
Yes. Now, when I was writing this book, and what I've tried to do in this book is take all these transpersonal, paranormal, whatever best name suits them, experiences, and kind of look at them together.
Sure.
Not just the near-death experience.
Yes.
And one of the things that I noticed is, when people are imminently dying, you know, maybe on a hospice program, that as they die, sometimes friends, relatives, even health professionals will see smoke, mist, a fog, or something leaving the body. And these people do not come back. They are not resuscitated. They don't come back in their physical form.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that they don't come back otherwise, but they don't come back in their physical form. Now, near-death experiences, I have not seen any descriptions of this fog mist happening to people when they go into, and like they're having a cardiac arrest, and then they come back and talk about the near-death experience.
Right.
Now, at this point, because it's kind of a new notion, I don't know whether they don't have them or whether we just haven't looked for them and it's not documented. My sense is if it had happened, people would have noticed. But
yes.
So far, there is no documentation, at least that I can find, that this happens during the near-death experience.
I should just say that your work and mine are a clamshell. You are looking at all of this as a serious researcher, and thank you for your scholarship, which is just remarkable. And you're looking at it primarily from the viewpoint of the evidence we have from this side. And my work is much more a free-form attempt to look at all the evidence and try to understand what's true for this science in the broadest sense. And one of the things I can do is tell you what that mist is. As we're dying, at the part of the process is that the inner part of our being, we're built like a Russian doll. We're like nested energy bodies. And the outer couple of bodies are going to stay here, including the one that's tuned to this vibratory level of this level of reality, so we think it's physical, staying here. But there are internal bodies which have traveled almost every night travel out of body to go have fun, meet with people, and live our real lives, and then come back in to live this weird temporary life on Earth. That's getting all gathering in our chest, all of that wonderful energy, which is who we really are, is gathering in the chest, and then it leaves either through the top of the head or through the chest. And people sitting at the deathbed, because it is still vibrating very close to the level of this level of reality, which is, we think, the lowest level of spiritual vibration, we're not sure. Because it's still vibrating very low, people, especially people of higher vibratory level naturally, who are sitting at the deathbed, can see it rise, and it looks uh-huh. like a mist. Uh-huh. That's what that uh-huh. mist is. Now, what happens is it's continuing to increase its vibratory rate as it leaves the body, so it looks as if the mist dissipates or disappears. What's happening is, as it gets to a high enough vibratory rate, it's reforming into those energy bodies. It starts to look like a person again, although nearly everybody doesn't see that. Almost everybody doesn't vibrate enough to see it. It's still attached to the body by what we call the silver cord, which is just an umbilicus of some sort that attaches one body to all the others. And the body on the bed is going to die as soon as that frays. It frays. It basically dissipates. It doesn't necessarily break. It just dissipates. When that energy cord dissipates, that's bodily death. The body cannot support life anymore. It stops breathing. But our energy body, which is who we really are, feels fantastic. That's why I called my book The Fun of Dying. It's like the best time of your life, the dead tell us, to be released from the body and truly free and young and healthy and happy and have around you all the people you thought used to be dead but aren't dead. They're beautiful and happy and young looking and everybody's thrilled. It's the best moment of your life to have that happen. But unfortunately, we don't know that. Most people don't know that because they haven't done this research as I have. But that's what that mist is. And that's why it appears only at actual death and not at the different experience, which is near-death experience. Very important experience, near-death experiences, but they're not death. And the people who have them are not in the same place that the dead are.
Well, I remember Ken Ring on a TV show, somebody was asked that question, and he said something about is the near-death experience actual death or is it the doorway to death? And that's not an answer that we know yet. I mean, that was his comment, you know. I think that's kind of what you're saying is like, is this just someplace right before that? You know, where you kind of get a glimpse and then come back. I can tell you that near-death experiences, whatever it is so profound for most people. I mean, and they also have physical body changes. You know, some people become more psychic, and to their surprise, because these people have never been, even know anything about more much about the psychic phenomenon, or they interfere with electronic equipment. You know, they go to check out in the grocery store and the machine gets all screwy because they're too close to it.
Their energy level is raised substantially. That's right. This is a common thing. It is a transformative experience for almost everyone who has a near-death experience. And it's a profoundly spiritual experience.
Yes.
It's just a different track from actual death. I'm just going to interrupt quickly here and just remind everyone, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch. And you can learn more about my books, find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest today is Madeline Lawrence. She is a research parapsychologist of the highest level. Her book is wonderful. I urge everyone to read her book, which is called The Death View Revolution. I think it's going to just transform your life when you read it. She and I are kind of, as I've said, opposites in that I'm a generalist. I'm trying to understand all of this and put it together. And she is doing the wonderful work of digging deep into what these strange experiences are, consciousness-based, that everybody seems to have, or most people seem to have at some point in their lives, and certainly by death. At death, we all have them. So this is a great service she's performing, and I'm very grateful to her for doing it. And I learned a lot from her book because I never dug that deep. And now, as she and I talk, I'm helping her to understand how her work fits with what hundreds of other researchers are doing in all these different fields. So this is an exciting time, Madeline. We're all working together to help the world understand what really is true.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's very exciting, and it's so interesting. Writing this book, I learned a lot myself because obviously I had to find out more information, based on what many other researchers have done. And I mean, it's just what the body and soul or whatever spirit, however we define that, is capable of is just unknown totally at this point.
I
would like to make one point too, Roberta. You mentioned the physicist and the difficulty they have doing this kind of research in an academic environment. I think what you're saying is very crucial, that they need to be definitely involved in this kind of research. But the other hunch I have, and is at this point it's just a hunch, is that the geneticists also need to be involved.
Yes.
It seems like there's some research that shows kind of psychic ability or openness, and I think you mentioned this, to these phenomena. It gets transmitted, and it's called, in some research studies, they've said it's like a recessive gene.
Yes,
so a lot of people will have this history kind of in their family.
Yes.
And also, as you're young, really young children are more receptive to this. As we become adults, something happens to our body, it seems, that gets closed off. But as we get ill or closer to death, we're more open to them again. So there's this genetic predisposition that some people have, which makes them more open to having these kind of experiences or being receptive. And you see that with the after-death communication, that sometimes the person who has died recently, usually, will not contact the person who they had the best emotional connection with. They'll contact someone else that's within their circle, and people don't understand that. But usually it's because the person that they have contacted is more able or open to receiving this kind of communication.
Yes. Yes. So grief can be a barrier too. So if someone is very deeply in grief, I worked with a widow some years ago who was just devastated by her husband's death. Now, I'm not psychic at all, Madeline. I refuse to be. But her husband started to bug me in ways I could not ignore to get me to call her when she was crying, so that she would have someone to comfort her. And I did call, and in every case, she had some kind of problem. And, I thank her husband for helping me do my work, helping someone. And but it was very, very strange and distinctive to have this person I never knew in life suddenly barging into my head with uh-huh. Call
That's
her,
right.
Call her, call her. And indeed I did. This is a new science. I think that you and I agree on that. This is a many-faceted, whole new science. It is basically the third wave of physics. We had Newtonian physics, which was, everything is solid and clockwork. Then we got quantum physics, which was not necessarily solid and clockwork, but still solid-ish and clockwork-ish. This third wave of physics is entirely consciousness-based. We are coming to understand now what actually the earliest quantum physicists knew. They realized what they had found, except they were ignored because it was a bridge too far at that point for physicists. But consciousness, human consciousness, is primary and pre-existing. Max Planck discovered this, and he said it has to be true, but nobody wanted to hear that. They gave him a Nobel Prize for something else, which was just quantum physics. But unfortunately, now the people doing this third wave of physics are are lawyers and a few scientists, but nobody who is sort of accepted can do this work and still keep his career. But somewhere in a fourth grade class is a future physicist in pigtails who is going to get, mark my words, everyone, is going to get the Nobel Prize in about 2080, mm-hmm. as the mother of consciousness-based physics. And at that point, the world will have altogether changed for the better. So it's going to happen. And I love physics. I mean, I love physicists. I read Scientific American eagerly to see what they're doing, and only to keep hitting my forehead that they can be so clueless still. I never even took physics in high school, and I can explain to them things they're still trying to understand. Because, as I say, we're now doing physics at a whole different level in a whole different way. And it's going to replace both Newtonian and quantum physics, because it's a complete understanding of how reality works.
Yes, I would agree. I'm not as familiar with the physics side of this, although I have read some of those books. I think it's I agree with you, though, that that's the door that has to be open for us to understand the afterlife. We have a fair amount of evidence about translocation, where you were talking about, for example, out-of-body experiences.
Yes.
And even during the near-death experiences, I mean, people see things, hear things, experience things that, given the state of their physical body, they should not have been able to see.
Yes. I mean,
you know, so we have, you know, a lot of substantiation for people, you know, they see, like in my case, you know, Ken and I wrote an article about this woman who saw a red shoe on the roof of the hospital,
which
she was out of the way. Right.
Tell that story. She left her body.
Well,
tell the story.
She came in cardiac arrest, and when she was resuscitated, she talked to the nurse who was taking care of her, and she said, and she had described a pretty typical near-death experience. And when she was out of her body, she said she was up on. She could see the roof of the hospital, and when she was there, she said she saw a red shoe on the northwest corner of the roof. I'm always impressed when somebody can tell the northwest corner from the southeast corner.
You know,
so the nurse told the resident who was on at the time. So he was curious, which we always love these curious people. He got someone to open the door to the roof and came down holding onto this red shoe.
Wow, I know. Wow.
And there's no way that, you know, the woman obviously was not on the roof. During her resuscitation, nobody would have been talking about a red shoe on the roof. I mean, it's highly improbable that, you know,
thank you for being charitable and saying it's highly improbable. It is impossible for her not to have been able to leave her body when that experience was ongoing, or there's no other way she could have known that shoe was there. Absolutely right. Because it was not visible from below. Nobody knew it was there.
No, that's right.
Isn't that exciting? That's a great classic story. I should just tell everyone. And I'm thrilled that you were there to help to write it, because it's a great, there are several of stories in this field that are what, William James called White Crows, and that's your publisher is White Crow. These are all of the books that come from this wonderful, wonderful publication company are in the same field. They're serious scholarly efforts to understand some amazing things which are actually factual, and each of them is in its own way a white crow that proves to us that all of this is real. But what William James sought were things that could not be explained except if our consciousness was indeed independent of our bodies. Uh-huh. And this story, this red sneaker story that you wrote with Dr. Ring is just classic. This is one of several which everybody in this field knows about and loves.
Yes. So the piece about, and what, you know, what is often referred to as translocation, where part of us can go someplace else and see things. And, you know, we still have more work to do, but there's so many of these events and they happen to workaday world people. They're not psychics.
That's right.
They're not, you know, they're not, this is a, as big a surprise to them as it is to anyone else,
right,
that this has happened to them. So they don't have any vested interest.
That's
except
right.
Other than to talk about
wonderful
this experience,
point. Yes.
And say, you know, what happened to me that I could see on top of the roof? You know, that's, and that's something that's, I think, very important for caregivers, for family members, you know, that we need to say, you know, we may not totally understand all this. Or some people like you who have had other kind of experiences have a better insight, but we can validate them. We know that millions of people have these kinds of experiences, and it doesn't mean you're going crazy. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you from a mental health perspective. It just happens to a lot of people, and we're still investigating this. And I think so. The translocation, there's a lot of evidence, and there's more research that needs to be done. The afterlife becomes tougher to understand and to scientifically show. And I agree with you that if the physicists are held back, not able to do the research that they can do to understand this better, then it's going to be delayed. The you know, discovery of what happens will take much longer. So we have people like you and other people who have these experiences, and you know, that is very valid. That's something that we know happens, and they need to be validated. And that has to be normalized. But if we want to take it further, we need those physicists to be working on this kind of research and the geneticist. So, you know, to look at, is there something in genetic makeup that helps people be more in touch with this and have more of these experiences?
I should just say parenthetically that the way I know what's happening in the afterlife and how it all works is just a lot of research. I've spent half a century researching this, and we have hundreds of pre-1950, lots since, of course, but I wanted purity, so I went pre-1950. We have hundreds of communications received from dead people then, who again were everyday people, and they're researchers. Were primarily people who weren't necessarily scientists, but were very interested in what they could see as a cutting-edge phenomenon. And they've written all of that down. 100 years ago, there were people doing this research. It's been preserved. I read it. In all of those hundreds of communications, there was not one outlier. They all described the same process, the same physics, the same pastimes, the same everything about this enormous fact, which is that we all live eternal lives. And when you put that together with the fact that someone walked the earth 2,000 years ago who told us all the same stuff, only we didn't understand what he was saying, and that's Jesus. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, they preserved his words. Forget whether you're, I don't care what religion you are. This is not a religious statement at all. This is a statement that we can document that someone who walked the earth 2,000 years ago and said he knew this stuff, and his words were preserved in what I think of as hostile custody, the Catholic Church. And if we open those words and look at them, we can show about 95% of them are exactly what this dead are telling us today. Now, you can talk about odds against chance. The odds against chance for that not to be real when we have all that is just are just beyond calculation. And thanks to the wonderful quantum physicist researchers, Max Planck is one of my big heroes. Thanks to them, we now understand the physics of the afterlife. Everything is energy, and just at different vibratory rates. This is what we think, as I say, is the lowest. And we are right now, all of our minds are tuned to this level of reality, and in fact, each to a separate spot in this level of reality, which is the body we think we're in. When we die, all that happens is, like a TV set, our mind tunes to a slightly higher vibratory rate. And there it picks up a whole new solid reality. And they say, in fact, that that's real life. This one is not. This is not as real as it is where they are now. But only when in the first part of the 21st century we started to get good quantum physics for dummies books could we make sense of what the dead were telling us. It was so hard to believe that they could travel by mind and do all these other things. Now it's just, we understand it now. It's just that we have to get the physicists to look at what we've discovered and to say, okay, we accept that this is something that we can at least research further. That's all we ask. We don't want anybody to feel that we're trying to tell them anything. In fact, I can't wait, Madeline, to turn this over to real physicists. Uh-huh. I mean, people deserve to have real physicists doing this work. They deserve to have it funded. But it'll take a while longer. Right. Your book is helping, though, because books like yours give people the sense that there is a scientific grounding for all of this information. It's just that there are so many different aspects of it. It's as if we're discovering, gravity for the first time, or some other aspect of reality that's so fundamental. So you've done a great service in putting this together and saying, okay, scientists, here, I'm talking to you, I'm talking your language, but of course, people can still understand it who aren't scientists, but I'm talking your language. This is serious. Time to investigate this stuff. Thank you for that.
Yes. Well, thank you, Roberta. Thank you for your kind words. I do think that scientists, any scientist who gets involved in this area, though, will find it interesting, exciting, and the people that you come in contact with are so wonderful.
Yes.
It is a phenomenon that when you meet these people, they are just warm, open, and they want to talk about it. And if you're open to listening, they are so thrilled to have somebody. And I did an interview and with someone who had, and this is one of my projects right now, who had a near-death experience. And one of the side effects, after effects, is they report losing their fear of death. Yes, well, it's one thing to not be afraid of dying when you've just been resuscitated. It's another thing is, well, what happens when you're actually facing death? So I've been looking for patients who have had a near-death experience who maybe now are imminently on a hospice program or dying. Uh-huh. And this one man that I interviewed and videotaped, he had a near-death experience 8 years previous. And he said it was the most beautiful, extraordinary experience that he had ever had in his whole life. Now, 8 years later, he was on a hospice program. He was dying of cancer. And so I asked him, I said, okay, now how do you feel? And his comment was, I can't wait.
Yes.
I can't wait.
I feel that way too, Madeline.
I know the experience is going to be just as beautiful, just as wonderful.
Yes.
And he said, and his family was there too, and he said, I don't want to leave my family, but I know it's just going to be temporary.
Yeah.
And I just know, and then this is interesting, so I followed up with him. And I talked to his wife. He died 3 weeks after the interview. Mm-hmm. And his wife was with him when he died. And she said, when he died, he saw hands coming down. And he lifted his hands up. And you see that sometimes with dying patients.
Yes.
And his wife said, as he died, his hands were lifted up. And she could see this mist leaving his body, and his face was just glowing.
Yes. What a beautiful story.
Yes. I mean, it just is really, so for a scientist, it's a major, it's such an interesting phenomenon, and the people are just beautiful. I mean, they're just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I think that that's a very important point that you make. Learning this, it really changes everything. Now, you can learn it in one dramatic experience of some sort, whether it's near death or I had an experience of light, two of them actually. If you have an extraordinary experience, you never look at anything the same way again. Mm-hmm. But even if you don't, what I've learned is that when you really internalize these truths, it makes all the difference in the world. You really do altogether lose your fear of death, and you really do become joyful in ways people cannot even imagine who yes. haven't done it. So it's a journey worth taking, if only for your own happiness and peace of mind. Because when you no longer fear death, you really no longer fear anything, is what I've discovered. You know, mortgage payment, doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Because you know you're eternal and you know you're safe. That's the most important thing we could possibly learn.
Right, right, right. Well, and it's definitely a lesson. It's definitely an experience that happens to the people who have near-death experiences. and, excuse me, I think I'm losing my voice here.
That's what happens when we talk, I know.
Yeah.
I do it too. So we're coming toward the end of our time. Is there anything you really want people to know? And then I want you to give your website and how they can contact you.
As far as I think the message is really to provide support for people who have these experiences, to normalize them, to say we know millions of people who have them, and to provide support for the researchers. And, you know, public opinion is very strong in this country, particular for funding and for making changes. A lot of changes have occurred in the healthcare field because people made it happen.
Yes.
You know, that they fought and they said, you know, we like the complementary therapies, you know, people started using them, people started wanting more information about them. And then there was funding has come about for that to guide them into complementary therapies that really do work and are legitimate.
Yes.
And I think this is another field that public opinion can help in terms of, you know, making more funding available, saying that this is where people are interested in. This is an area that's open. It's been started. We have some excellent, excellent researchers, some excellent, excellent books that you and I have both talked about during this time. And so the foundation is there, but we all need, researchers need help to move it forward and move it forward in a faster way than what has happened with more support.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your website?
Actually, right now, I still have an old website. It's I'm also a hypnotherapist, so you can go to www.hypnosisinfo.org, and you'll see my information there.
And can people contact you through there?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Okay. And the book is The Death View Revolution, A Guide to Transpersonal Experiences Surrounding Death. And I can testify this is a terrific book because it's both scholarly and, I mean, footnotes, what a thought, you used footnotes. It's both very scholarly and at the same time easy and exciting to read, and it contains some wonderful stories. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you fully grasp what that means and all the implications of it, it's going to change everything in your life. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning now about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. And my nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, that talks about all the ways the dead are contacting us even now. You need to recognize what the signs are, and also some amazing new ways that we're learning to contact the dead. You can find details about all my books, plus my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, we're staying in this vein for a little bit. Our guest next week is Carla Wills Brandon. She's another expert in the field of death-related experiences, although her expertise is somewhat narrower in that she focuses primarily on experiences that are basically received around the deathbed. She completes our trilogy of what I think are the three most important living researchers in this field, Inika Kodum, Madeline Lawrence, and then Carla Wills Brandon. So I'm thrilled to be able to bring these people to you and to help you contact, if you'd like to, or learn more about the amazing things that you may be witnessing any day at the deathbed of a loved one. So it's important, as Madeline says, it's important for the sake of those you love and for your own sake that you really become familiar with what they have to tell us. Again, one more time, we've been speaking this week with parapsychologist Madeline Lawrence, and her book, The Death View Revolution, is just perfect. So please do read that. It's going to actually, I think, remove all doubt in your mind that there is something going on. And your mind and your brain are two different things. I'm going to tell you that when you are certain that your mind is eternal, no question in your mind, however you learn it, you're going to experience joy beyond anything I even can describe to you, and it stays forever. Don't you think it's time that you gave yourself that essential gift? For now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.